was not asking for a rough, and Abbott starts offering. The first, when he was alone, but after a few weeks, he offers to go down and have enjoys having a nap, which is the part of the store. But when they're both up early in the morning, enjoys still asleep. Annie finds herself saying yes, yes, yes. So Abbott goes down and has blinded for in front of the TV during an episode of My Little Pony. Albeit an episode they've seen before. The first thing on the kitchen table and him kneeling on the tile floor, with her up in his bunk bed, shuffling around, her voice lying in position, he comes in comic books while he stands and holds her bags. On a bed, on the floor of her room, against the wall, until she's lost in a dizzy haze of Abbott's mouth sucking her, licking her, bringing her off fast, or slow, or hard, or soft, however she tells him to do it. She wears a pair of blue eye tights and a garter belt, blushing furiously the whole time the clock rings her up, to give him easy access when she's wearing a skirt on the edge of the crib. The first time he gives his hand up her leg and encounters her skin, he looks up at her wonderingly, and she smiles him shyly and misses skirt to her look. Abbott runs his finger along the edge, just where the soft, translucent material gives way to bare skin. She shivers and squeezes his shoulder, and tells him to do it already, catch her already. He does, going fast and hard, greedy, making him see himself in sounds. And he gasps and counts twice, one orgasm spilling into another as he waxes with his mouth. As he works on his mouth. Annie finds that she wants him all the time. Now that she knows what he can do with his mouth, his lips and tongue and teeth, and his nimble, graceful fingers, she wants him on her every minute of every day. She gets more and more over him, taking his head into place to get him just where she wants him, telling him what to do, and when, and how much, wrapping the legs around his shoulders and drumming the heels into his back, a steady rhythm for him to follow. From what she can tell, Abbott does it too. At least he keeps offering, and when Annie asks, he says he's enjoying it, that he wouldn't change a thing. She isn't sure whether to believe him at first, but then, sometimes when he kneels by her, or when she tugs on his hair, she can see something in his eyes, like perfect contentment. And she starts to believe in this more and more, to believe in him, and what they can have together. Annie opens herself to Abbott, and she cries his name with a rush of orgasm, and sometimes, when they're sitting around sipping special drink and watching TV, she holds his hand, firm and easy and friendly. Abbott, what are we? Annie asks, shooting at the casual. Abbott's kissing a knee, a little constellation of records that he seems to like, working his way up to her. She crowds her hand through his hair. I mean, are we still just friends, or something else? He looks up and brightens. Oh, we're having a relationship talk. He stands and moves onto the bed next to her, bouncing the mattress, and lays on his side, raising her with his head back up in his arm. Okay, first you say that you want to be monogamous and have PDAs and babies and go to the spring fall together, and then I reject the idea of commitment and we fight, but ultimately you decide that we can make it work. Abbott, no, stop, she says, pressing her hand to his chest. He stops, waits for her. Annie gathers her thoughts. I don't want that. I mean, it might be nice to go to the formal. I do have a dress I can wear. And you know the little moonstone necklace that I have? Abbott nods encouragingly. With a curly silver circle. Great. Wait. Annie closes her eyes and tries to get back on track. What I mean is, spring formal aside, she breaks up, frustrated. Abbott, to her surprise, reaches out and touches her hair. Not pretending to tuck it behind her ear, he's touching her with his fingertips and taking a deep breath, as if it's as comforting to him as it is to her. So this is actually a talk about how you think you should want commitment and monogamy, but you don't, he says evenly. Annie bites her lip. She hadn't thought about it that way before. I wanted to ask you if this is how you normally do this. Like, you said you've done this lots of times before, and so I thought, maybe it is normal to just have a best friend who goes back at you sometimes and doesn't want you to return the favor. Abbott makes a little frown, and his voice gets louder. You do return the favor, but I There's no rule that says the advice ready to use darling you is a new boyfriend. I guess. There's a long silence, not entirely uncomfortable, in which Abba's fingertips keep softly striking her own temple. I don't actually know what I'm doing, Abba says slowly, considering. I've never done this with a friend before. I guess because I never really had friends before. It's all been a lot more casual, string-free, consequence-free fun. This last phrase sounds like something someone else said that way once, but he's just repeating the right. And it makes Annie quietly furious to think about it. Still, a part of her worries that he really means it. She's worried. Is that what you want with me? Is that what you want me to try? Abbott meets her eyes at this, getting sharp and focused. No. Okay then. It makes Annie feel a little better, somehow, to know that Abbott doesn't have this all figured out either. That he's as new to this as she is, in a way. I have a book, she offers, and I'm waiting. Actually, I have a bunch of books. On. Yeah. You. Abbott narrows his eyes. You mean neurotypical people? No. Asexual people? No. Are you asexual? I do have a book on that, actually. No, Abbott. You know, people who are submissive. No, Abbott says. There's a long and I can't. I don't know if that's how you want to identify, just, well, there was this chapter on Cybersaurus, its mission seemed familiar, and, well, Abbott appears to consider this. Do you have any books on people like you? Annie blushes. Yes. Maybe? I'm not sure yet, but. Sighing, she sits up and reaches over to her desk. Grabs the book on top of the pile and hands it over, not making eye contact. It's actually dominable, a workbook for nurse beginners. Cool, is all Abbott says, paging through. And he's breathing so it's down a little. Really? Yes. Annie leans over on the bed and gives him half a hug. Have a pat on the back. Says a little later, as he flips through the first chapter, fingers dropping nervously against the pages. Yeah? Abbott's fingers don't stop moving against the pages of the book. If Troy and I, that would be fine with me, she says quickly. And she thinks it's true. She's had a while to get used to the idea, and the book says it's okay. And it feels right for her. She's so used to competitiveness and jealousy, especially after the whole Bridger and Jeff situation. The competitiveness and jealousy are almost a reflex, but when she starts to think about it, she's pretty sure that's all it is, just a knee-jerk reaction. Annie reminds herself that she's allowed to want this to try, forever, for herself. There was a name for it, and a way to make it work. I think she's here with the kid together, she tells Abbott. This time, Abbott's the one who reaches out. He takes a hand in his and grabs the fingers together. Cool, he says again. Then, quietly, almost affectionately, he says, do you want me to go down with you? Annie thinks about getting up and finding a book's polyamory to show Abbott, but figures it away. Yes, Annie says. A few days later, on campus, she takes him aside in the study room and touches his arm tentatively. Can you? Do you think you can meet me in the supply room later? She wore her thigh highs today in her underwear, with this in mind, and just the idea that has been driving her wild. She hasn't even been able to concentrate on her graphic, which for her is almost unheard of. Abbott that's ever grown. Yes, he said immediately. Definitely. Then he pulls his scarf out and adds, assuming that you mean we should meet up for sex. Shh, and he hisses, even though the rest of the group is out of the way, and not looking in my direction. Yes, Abbott, I mean for sex. Cool, Abbott says. Cool, cool, cool. We're after lunch. There's a fire in my cafeteria. Annie nods. She sits through lunch with bubbling anticipation. Her frustration makes Abbott bubbling up inside her. She's so wet, her thighs are slick. She makes small talk with Charlie about French fries, and British about the ketchup, and when there's calls and sales of fruit cups, she doesn't even care. She hopes they can't tell, but she is now famous. Abbott doesn't seem any different than usual, chattering away with Troy and Jack, munching happily on his bedroom salad. She wonders if he feels the way she does, jangling nervous inside. He stays cool and collective while he says goodbye to the group and goes off on his own. Not betraying a thing. So Annie subsequently spends 10 minutes sitting on rocks in the Solara while he's in the cabin, if he's still interested. She resists the urge to touch herself. But when he does show up, he's breathing kind of hard, and he doesn't waste any time enjoying her over in the dark corner, flinging off his messenger bag and sliding to his knees between her legs like a run to stay on home. Hey, he says, looking at her. Hey, she replies. Nothing a hand in his hair. You ready? I was really looking forward to this. Our bed starts. His hands on her knees, starting position. Touch me, Annie says, not even hesitating over the words anymore. Put your mouth on me. Put your mouth on me. Hurry. He doesn't waste any time, showing his scarf up and getting arms on her thighs, lifting her up at an ankle. Burying his mouth inside her. She hears him inhale deeply, like he's taking in his mouth. Abbott, she says, and touches his neck lightly with her fingertips, watching his skin shimmer. Suck hard. He follows the light guiding touch and presses in the belly, giving her the suction and friction she's asking for. She's close to coming already. She spent the day rubbing her thighs together, thinking about this, waiting for this, so even the first simple touches of Abbott's tongue make her want to cry out when she begins falling. Abbott pulls his mouth away, replacing his tongue with his fingers in a plate. He laughs me quiet, he warns. Right, she says, nodding at him. Come on, put your fingers inside me. Abbott meets her eyes and dares, slips right inside and starts to stroke. Annie laughs and gasps and encourages his head back down with a hand firm on the back of his neck. He goes willingly, sucking and laughing like it's all he ever wanted to do. Outside of the hall, she can hear students talking, laughing, shuffling to and from the cafeteria. She closes her eyes tight, and breaks her cheek to keep herself from making noise, and giving them away. Annie feels like the pressure building in her, coming fast and hard. So she rocks her hips forward and back and forth against Abbott's mouth until it overtakes her, and she thinks she does cry out a little, involuntarily. Then she clamps down against Abbott's fingers, and he sets hard against her clit. It goes on and on. She feels her whole body trembling violently, but is completely out of control. And when she finally comes back to herself, she feels strange, almost out of body, her fingers and toes tingling and numb. She manages. Abbott is still stroking and sucking, but she's too sensitive for it now. Stop. Stop. He does, immediately. She takes a long, shuddering breath. I've never seen you come that fast before, Abbott reports. There's a smear of wetness on his cheek, and he looks old. Yeah, Annie manages. That was intense. Is it the semi-public sex? Annie grins at him shyly. I've always wanted to do it in school, she confesses quietly. He is. Thanks for going along with it. Abbott looks strangely pleased. You're welcome, he says. Anything you want, Annie.
body touches as though he's brushing hands. Habit's eyes low, and his head bowed slightly. Annie watches, fascinated. An inarticulable tenderness gleaming inside her. You really mean that, don't you? She asks softly. He doesn't raise his head, he replies immediately, confidently. Yes. Annie keeps his jaw in her hand, holds him like that for a moment. The Abbot coughs and asks, are you running again? So this time? She thinks about it. Abbot's mouth is hardly even right yet. Her hand falls, she leans down and puts a slow, chaste kiss on his cheek, where he's wet from the body. Sure, she says. Vicky this one. Abbot nods and kisses up at her, starting with just a thumb on her clit, barely even touching her, moving slow, teasing circles. Annie kept the back of Abbot's neck, scratching with the nails of the skin, the way he likes. That's nice, Abbot, she murmurs, holding his gaze. You don't have to worry about that. That's nice to know, Abbot says, and reaches into Troy's personal space to twist the string into the next pattern, freeing it from Troy's hands. Their fingers brush together, comfortable, because they've always been comfortable with each other. After a few minutes, they hit a pattern that even the letters swell, so Troy gives the string back to Abbot and tries to make some true one again. It's a sort of sexy show, and as people go half naked and make out on screen, he can't stop noticing Abbott's presence, Abbott's body in the chair next to his, watching the show with him. Troy feels like he's breathing too fast. Maybe I should take a picture, Abbott needs, staring at the string in his hands. Troy glances. collapses at her. It's such a hilarious thing as that might as well be for a hunter finding it. Without the way I've encouraged Hans about his head in the first years together. What if it were doing first, Troy wants? How then, how terrifically, Hans asked the family. Troy is a football star of 15 and the superstar best actor in his hometown, which means he's supposed to keep in shape and will pulse and go to every party and get drunk a lot and tell me what to do, represent the town, and take cheerleaders and be a gentleman and get laid as often as possible. After a while, his coach figures out that he's never going to be comfortable being too character and stops making so many demands on him. That's a place of strengths. And Troy likes that. Likes being given a playbook to memorize and a place to run and a ball to carry. With girls, though, that never really happens, so he just does his best to date and be fairly. The prettiest and nicest of the fullback cheerleader. Even though he's never sure when he's supposed to get his last jacket and when he's supposed to get his mates. He has been likes and he chooses things. Whether he, what bands they go to see, which earrings she should wear at the straps. So mostly he makes a lot of guesses and hopes he's not fucking up too bad. He hopes she's not miserable and hopes that she likes burgers and his friend Jason's band and the earrings and the little bits of hand for him. She never really says one way or another. Just fans him, kisses him, suggests him. Troy, she breathes. One night when they're making out, his dad's bowling and she's guided his hand under her shirt so that he can touch her over her brow. I want you to know something. Troy braces himself for a revelation which is asked. She's terminally ill. She's breaking up with him. She secretly aspires him to kill him. But what she says, after a dramatic pause, is, I've been saving it for you. He always asks, saving what? But then realization comes, and for one utterly crazy second, he considers telling her that he's been saving it too, since it sounds nicer than saying he's able to smash his hot water back. Yeah, is all he ends up saying, breathlessly, because they've been making out for a while, and because he's tired of his pants. He shifts his hips away from her lips, not wanting her to feel it. Then wonders if maybe she wants to. Do you want that? She asks. She's so sweet and nice. She's got a hand on his waist. It's just running her fingertips back and forth over his skin where it peeks out from under his t-shirt. Yes, he says, because at least he knows the right answer to this one. We might have to move into the back seat for him. A little wrinkle appears in the forehead. One that he usually only sees when she's yelling at her little sister to get out of her room. Her hand stops moving against his waist. Or we could make a night of it, Troy tries. We could do something special. We could do something special. The wrinkle goes away and she smiles at him. Yeah, she breathes, kissing him deeply. Her fingertips start being weaker. After he drops her off that way, he goes home and jacks off. Then lays awake half the night, trying to figure out what he can do that would be special. He ends up renting a hotel room with money from his savings and taking it to dinner at the nice steakhouse first. He's been smiling all through the meal, and smiles when he gets into the hotel room, and smiles as Troy takes off the clothes and trembling hands. I wanted you to be the one to show me that, she says, gasping, after his mother got the cotton wool and cotton inside her. There's a trickle of sweat on her temple. She's beautiful, and Troy loves her, and he's absolutely terrified. She's so hot and tight inside that he's afraid he's going to come embarrassingly fast. It's about time, and he knows he's supposed to make it good for her, but he doesn't know how. He clutches his eyes tight and tries not to move for a while, conscious of the heavy breathing and his big body shifting awkwardly beneath him. Just tell me what you want. What me to do, he manages, after a minute. His mean thinks what surprised at that, and smiles. Not her usual sweet smile, but a big one that shows up her own bite. Really? She's moving around beneath him, and Troy bites his lip. Yeah. She kisses him. Hot. Serious. And he wraps his hips against her in a slow, rolling thrust. When she breaks the kiss, her forehead falls to rest on his shoulder, and she's breathing funny. I was so freaking you, she laughs, shaking against him, clenching around him. Troy laughs too, but help himself. And then his head drops forward again, and he's coming, hard and sudden. Oh shit, sorry. He pulls out, not meeting her eyes. He's fucked it up. His knee collapses onto her side in the bed, still giggling. Fuck it, she says. Troy pauses in the process of throwing up a condom, his eyes going wide. And then she sits up and grins at him. Her breasts are small, with big, dark brown nipples, and her pubic hair is neatly shaved into a sort of rectangle. And Troy grins at within himself, type that this isn't the worst first time anyone's ever had in their lives. We can try again, right? We have one eye. She calls over to sit next to him, pressing her forehead to her shoulder. Slowly, but not at all tentatively, she draws her hand over his thigh and starts touching his dick. She's trying her fingertips along it, careful not to graze them with her nails. We have all night, Troy agrees, remains, relaxes into the couch. Troy watches her right after that, just keeps his eye on him, though he doesn't know what exactly he's watching for. Robert doesn't touch him, doesn't try anything. Doesn't invade his personal space, or even look up when Troy walks in the bathroom to the bedroom with the towel around his waist. He doesn't seem gay. Troy's pretty sure he would have noticed before now if Abbott was gay. When Abbott suggests that Annie move in with him, Troy wonders if it's meant as a secret message to him, like Spider-Man. You had your chance. Do you really want Annie to be in with us? He asks. The day after the big housewarming party when they're making sandwiches separate side in the tiny kitchen. Troy passes Abbott the turkey exactly the moment that he needs it, and Abbott slices some cheese even though he doesn't want any, just because he knows Troy does, and they have the lesson back and forth wordlessly, the way Troy remembers having the football back and forth when he and his team were in the past. Abbott shrugs one shoulder and puts the block of cheese in a flip-flop bag. I think it would be good for him. I think it would be good for us. Because she'll kind of stand. Troy suggests, hesitating. Maybe. I bet she knows when the water goes in the eye. That's true. Troy nods slowly. Does that mean we take out the gift for him? He asks, resigned. He knows these things can't last. You have to go up sometime. That's what his mum always says. Grow up. Get a girlfriend. Be a flubber. Abbott turns toward him, tomato and knife abandoned on the chopping block. No. Troy blinks and meets his gaze. No. Abbott never talks like this. Loud and almost angry. The trematorium is non-negotiable. It stays. It doesn't change. It's... He looks upset. Stuck. So Troy helps him out. It's a voice, Troy supplies softly. It sounds official. He sets his hand beside Abbott's on the counter so that fingers are almost touching. The tension drains out Abbott's face, and he raises one finger and he's, I've got an idea, perhaps. Or it should be. Then they're abandoning the sandwiches, abandoning the bitch, even abandoning the episode of The Walking Dead that's about to end, and Troy has never, ever seen Abbott do that before. Troy finds a broken ground and with the string and keys and old cell phone cords in the junk drawer, and Abbott finds the lease behind the fridge, and then the bending together of the document when Abbott is writing the new clauses, alternating red and blue in his careful, neat handwriting. We never give up on dreams, Troy says. Contractually. Abbott nods and puts it into lease talk. Troy doesn't understand it at all, but there seem to be a lot of wiggles and forthwiths, certainly not to satisfy any legal mind. There, Abbott says eventually. When he finishes writing, he looks up at Troy and slowly, deliberately, turns his hand over so that his palm up on the kitchen table. His knuckles brush against Troy's fingertips, and Troy wants really badly to reach over and take Abbott's hand, but he doesn't quite. Nothing's going to change, Troy. Habit says seriously. And Troy knows he needs it to be reassuring. Okay, Troy says. Everything seems so simple during the dream of Troy. He can find a costume in a funny accent and some really bad dialogue with the actors all in the to say things like, "I'll follow you anyway," and "just tell me what you need, exactly." And Abbott was smiling warmly. Abbott was throwing his arm around his shoulders. Abbott would grasp his hand firmly and whisper in his ear to tell him to be very, very still. Troy always shivers when Abbott does that, the whispering thing, because Abbott's breath is warm against his ear, and Abbott is a bit taller than he is, and Abbott somehow shifts his hands that he wraps half a fraction into Troy's palm. Troy thinks that Abbott must notice, that he must see Troy's reaction, that Abbott is observant and smart, and knows everything. Abbott must know this about him. That's probably why he offered. Inspector, what were those? Troy begins, and Abbott presses a single finger to Troy's lips. "Shh," he says dramatically, actually louder than Troy. They stay like that. Abbott pressed against his side. The part of Abbott's index finger cool against Troy's lower lip. Abbott's hand clasped firmly in his own. And if the zombie attack is surprised, Troy's heart hammers in his chest. Abbott removes his finger from Troy's lips. "I believe that they're gone, Constable," he says. Troy squeezes Abbott's hand. It seems like good characterization of Constable Reggie. Abbott squeezes back, so it must be okay. The disturbance knock at the door, and when they shout out in unison for Brenna to come in, she drifts through, bright and beautiful like always. Troy is caught between them to go to join them. She always thinks of the last games. And a deep, passionate desire to have Abbott to himself. "Hey, Annie," he says, after a moment, won over by her smile and her sensible shoes, and her overall Annie-ness. "Want to play Inspector Space Jam?" Troy has always thought that Annie would make a good Angie Lake, especially in the priest outfit. "We're doing the episode of the Inspector Constable Reggie last week," Abbott explains, "so potential roles are pretty much limited to people's zombie attackers and constables overbearing down." "Nah," Annie says after a moment. Troy notices her noticing the clasped hands. Annie knows they should stop. She let go and step away. But his stomach tightens, and he swallows hard, and he doesn't. Abbott doesn't let go either, and they have a whole conversation about it. Disturbingly, Abbott's skin warm and comfortable against his own. Troy's stomach does a slow flick when he thinks about how he's holding hands with Abbott around his ceiling, but beneath that, he feels calm. He trusts Annie almost as much as he trusts Abbott. After Abbott promises to get him some gum and gently closes the door behind him, he returns and smiles up at Abbott, swinging the clasped hand slowly. Then, almost without noticing, as if it's something they do all the time, Troy leans in and kisses him, gently, on the lips, in the soft, absent way that people kiss when they've been dating for months and they've grown used to one another. He realizes his mistake. He and Abbott aren't dating at all. Halfway through, he pulls back in horror. Abbott immediately cuts his head. "Huh," he says, terrifyingly uncommittal. Troy drops Abbott's hand and takes a couple of steps backward. I think I have to go," he blurts out. Then he stumbles from the dream of Rome and out into the two-foot leg, the hallway. He fumbles for his shoes, thrusts a jacket over his constable Reggie's back, and is out the door before Abbott can come after him. Restaurants, coffee shops. At one point, he's pretty sure he's near Bridget's place. He's never been there, but he dropped her off once, so it's birthday. And he considers going in and asking her for advice. Bridget's messed up from painfully open-minded and has made plenty of mistakes in her life. And has made plenty of mistakes in her life, so she'd probably understand. shrinkage is when we always miss these little emotions out on the floor, and then ask it to sort through them. Habit kind of observes actually behaving, triggered say, for abuse, and then go on from there down to there. But I can go on from there. Maybe with a digression about what his mum would say and how he'd be disposed, and how habits start is kind of scary, and how this isn't how it's supposed to be. Brutal would probably get wide-eyed and bright and completely sincerely fake and encourage him to explore his sexual lifestyle. And she told him there was nothing wrong with him, and then she'd probably engage in some terrible life-making scheme that would all be wrong and horrible in public. Not that the others would be any better. Jeff would probably tell him that Romantic loves a cool, hormonal being. Pierce would pull out whatever congratulations on being gay speech he prepared for Jeff. And Shelley would pull out that disappointed Martin term that Terry was also familiar with when he was coming from his actual world. At least Britta would probably have some thought. Annie. Sure, I could maybe talk to Annie. But you're thinking about how it could make her appear. Like some amazing, incredibly organized, garden-wearing version of the devil, Annie materializes from around the corner. Belatedly, to remember that she was going to the store. Her backpack looks full of groceries. Sure. She smiles when she sees him and skips over to where he's standing. What are you doing here? Joe panics, abruptly abandons any and all plans to tell her about his feelings, then points desperately at the nearest storefront. I'm going here, he blurts. Annie looks up dubiously. To the knitting store? Joe follows a gaze and sees that it is, in fact, a knitting store. Multicolored balls of yarn and beautiful sweaters are apart from the window display and two giant six-foot knitting needles. An idea strikes him. Yeah, Abbott said he teaches how to knit. I thought I'd get some more stuff. Annie smiles. Want some company? She asks, sticking out her elbow in a cheerful, gentlemanly way. Troy takes a deep breath. The first one he's taken since he accidentally kissed his best friend in the whole world and then fled the scene like a chump. And puts his arm through her. I really, really do, he replies. Tori has a lot of fun squeezing all the arms, evaluating the stretchiness, fuzziness, and health. Annie has a lot of fun systematically grilling the store owner. Annie has a lot of fun systematically grilling the store owner on the ideal materials for beginning knickers. They emerge with needles and a few balls of yarn. Purple and orange for her, orange and yellow for him. Annie likes to pick the colors. But not what she's now calling the weights and gauges. There's a lot of part of Sal for Abbott, who's been complaining about the yarn drying out of hands. In the process of picking up the perfect present for Abbott, Troy almost manages to forget that he's terribly messed things up with him, or led him on, or given him the wrong impression, or given him the right impression in the wrong way, or just generally ruined everything between them forever. But as they leave the store, Troy feels a heavy sense of dread that increases with each step. When they get back to the apartment, Troy lets Annie go through the door first, fancying and calling Abbott saying. But when Troy shuffles in behind her, Abbott has a calm half-smile for both of them, and when they give him his present and show him they are, his fire calls directed at Annie and Troy equally. Troy tries to breathe. Thanks, guys, Abbott says, rubbing some salve into his knuckles. This will be fun. And Troy mentions a smile in his direction. And Abbott nods him specifically. And then Troy really does breathe. Slowly. Letting it go. Three days before Troy's 17th birthday, after a big win in the field and the welcome rush of relief from the general, Troy doesn't kiss really badly. At first, Troy isn't even noticing the wrinkle of steam and sweat and towel. Full of dates calling each other fatter than giving each other high fives. But then the shouting, celebrating kind of football players dwindles, and Troy and Robbie are the last ones in the room, sitting side by side on the bench, Troy lacing up his sneakers and Robbie shoving things into his gym bag. You were great out there tonight, Robbie says. He's a second string player, but he got some field time tonight, filling in when Dylan took a right tackle in the third quarter. Hey, you too, Troy asks. Robbie threw his t-shirt on right after a shower, so it's wet in places. A skew on his body is sticking to him. seen was almost obscenely quiet. Troy doesn't see it, but he feels it when Bobby slides his hand over Troy's thigh, palm hot and confident, while Bobby squeezes slowly, gently. When he finally looks down, he's surprised how big Bobby's hands are, how his band is Troy's thigh, how his fingers stretch to touch Troy's kneecap. His breathing speeds up, and he raises his head to meet Bobby's gaze. Bobby looks at him calmly, but he licks his lips like he's nervous. Troy's stomach gives a slow flip as the possibility opens in front of him. He could reach down, cover up his hand with his. He could lean forward, put his mouth to the beat of water that still clinging to Bobby's skin, struggling to fall. Really good day, Bobby murmurs, and it strikes Troy that maybe he's just being friendly. Maybe he doesn't need anything. Maybe it's not what it feels like. Maybe it's not what it feels like. Hot shame rolls through him then. And he thinks about the big empty space there in. Open doors on both sides. Full of places where people could hide if they walked in and saw two football players making out. Troy's half high into the zipper of his jeans, and Robbie's lips are pink, wet, open slightly. Troy wants very badly to kiss him. And just do. Robbie's fingers are hot on his thigh, and Troy wishes he knew what to do, or how to tell, how to be sure. The moment holds it all longer, hovers in that space where Troy keeps on not kissing Robbie badly, and then his lips lie entirely as Robbie's hand slips off Troy's thigh. Troy waits for Robbie to leave, and puts his head in his hands and breathes out. Slowly. They both go to the party afterward, and even hang out a little. And Troy, out of desperation, pretends that nothing happened. Robbie is easy going and comfortable around him, but Troy begins to wonder if maybe nothing did happen. If he really did make it all up for nothing. Because surely if Robbie felt the way that Troy does, he'd be shaking with him, not meeting Troy's eyes, grimacing against the sharp taste of sheep cooked there in his mouth. Later that night, when Troy's alone in bed and still wet, he lets himself think about it. What might have happened if he had known what to do, if he had figured it out? Troy imagines Robbie kissing him, touching him, maybe even jacking him off in the showers. He wonders if Robbie has done that before, maybe done lots of stuff with other men. If Robbie would want to fuck him, maybe. And Troy, in the darkness of his childhood bedroom, puts his fingers inside himself and pretends it's cock. Pretends he's being fucked and gets the cold on tile of all the current showers. Pretends that he hasn't messed everything up. Troy is still feeling a little edgy around Abbott later that night when he shows them how to cast out. But then Abbott stands over his shoulder, breathing quietly, giving Troy directions and brushing against his arm, touching his hands to grip his grip. It's like being directed by Abbott in one of those movies. And Troy is so used to listening to Abbott in that situation, so used to trusting him, that his heart slows down when he finds himself absorbed in the task in front of him. It's clear now that Abbott is going to let Paul kiss him as he'd go. That he isn't going to say anything. Or do anything. Troy follows instructions and moves the arm around his needles until it's tangled systematically together. He breathes slowly and tries to be more like Abbott. Tries to put a lid on all his messy feelings and keeps letting out all over. Abbott is so calm and so disconnected, and clearly doesn't have any of his messy, salty feelings, and Troy wishes to keep like that. Okay, so if you want to make it right, you just do a different pattern of beating and violating for Abbott's nerves. And Annie shuffles over closer to Troy so she can watch what Abbott's doing. She smells like strawberries, and she smells at Troy, even though her knitting attempts are so far from going so well. And Troy knows she hates not being good at things. Troy smiles down. A few minutes later, when she gets mad at him and throws down the needles, Troy presses up against her and takes her through, step by step. And if it feels weird for him to be teaching Annie something, it also feels good in a really simple way to press up against her, to cheer her on when she wants a kiss in the air, to hug her one hand and watch her yarn turn into a logical battle. just have to figure out what to make for any service. Trade-offs. With great power comes great responsibility. And that's really a try. Adding grins. Intro grins back. Meeting. They play with the armor, trying different things, and be running together. But it's not until a couple months late, when Troy looks up from his hands and his face, that he realizes that Abbott's watching them. Troy tries to smile at him, but Abbott doesn't smile back. Instead, he puts on his puzzled face. Troy wants to explain, but doesn't know where to start, so he next to him concentrates on the knitting instead. He's basically just making the square. He figures that's good enough. Just had a rhythm together. Troy keeps his head down and waits for Abbott to be done in the silver water so he can grab his own spin. They sat in front of the TV with their bowls actually happen. It's how they always spend the Thursday mornings, hanging out and watching TV in their pajamas, being lazy. But the TV stays dark. Did you want to watch something? Troy asks eventually. Usually I would have something picked out. Tells Troy all about it and gets him excited to see it, and then they watch that. Sure, maybe you should pick. Troy pauses with the spoon halfway to his mouth, dripping milk back into the bowl. Ever since they met, Abbott has been showing himself, teaching him about Star Trek Voyager and inside space time, being shocked when Troy admits that he's never seen Buck Rogers in the 25th century or the episode of Friends with Chandler Peas and Monica. He's always liked him, liked that Abbott loves so much to share the things he loves with him. Abbott always picks the best out anyway, always knows exactly what's put on to suit Troy's mood. Last 4 hours, Troy shoves a spoon into his mouth. Milk dribbles down his chin. Reaching over suddenly, Abbott wipes the milk away and folded up Kleenex. Troy stares at him, frozen in the chin. The corner of Abbott's mouth turns out. Sorry. Troy tries to say, no, Abbott, don't apologize. But his mouth is still full, so he abhors the attempt and finishes chewing first. While he's swallowing, Abbott sets his bowl down personally and turns in his chair to look at Troy. Maybe we should talk about our romantic relationship, he suggests. Troy coughs on the cornflake. I know what you're going to say, Abbott continues, in less than story points. We don't have a romantic relationship, Abbott. Then back to Abbott, Grace. But you kissed me, and then you actually ran away like an idiot who Robert's meaning, and now I don't understand what you want. I don't want anything, Troy says immediately. I'm fine. I don't need. He drives off. Are you sure? Because if you want to have sex with me, I can... No! Troy's hand is shaking against his spoon. That's... Abbott, will you drop that already? Okay, Abbott says again. Do you want to have have sex with any of them. Troy says, No, I don't want to have sex with Annie. She's like my sister, but okay? Just because Annie and I are friends doesn't mean you and I are best friends still. You don't have to do this. Harriet doesn't speak, but stares at Troy for a while. Long enough for Troy to duck his head and stare at some corny things. Eventually, out of desperation, Troy turns on the TV. Angela Lansbury appears in the middle of songs and crying and counts Karen. So they watch the second half of 7 Barrow 6 and then she wrote while eating their breakfast. It doesn't suit Troy's mood at all. They happen to meet a film sentence together too, but Troy decides to skip and tells Abby he's not feeling good. After Abbott leaves, he calls into bed and stays there for a long time. Abbott isn't like other people, and it's not fair for Troy to want something from him that he can't give. Troy doesn't catch them in the act or anything. Doesn't overhear them or see Annie with his curse kick or arrow with his pants or something. It's just the way Annie looks at them one day when the three of them are eating takeout Chinese and sticking their chopsticks in each other like Pac-Man mouths. Not with a flirty crush vibe she used to shoot Troy's way, and not with the possessive desire she used to direct to Jeff. It's something different. More grown up. More sure of herself. She looks at them as if they share a secret, which is completely comfortable. As he watches them, Troy's heart starts racing. When his brain catches up to his heart, he thinks, no. He can't stop seeing it after that. He even finds himself looking for it, against his will. Looking for stuff like that, but willingly standing pressed up against Annie in the kitchen, like Annie's hair being carelessly slightly less at the back when he comes home from football practice, like the blankets on his bed being just a little messy on time in the middle of the afternoon. He wonders if Abbott made the same offer to Annie that he made to Troy, if he maybe offers that to the live people. If Annie said yes, if she kept saying yes. The plant has been sitting on the windowsill next to the back bench, basking in the sunshine and hopefully bearing some fruits that I will stop picking out and then get the bones put to the assignment. Troy's been taking care of the class, kind of obsessively, but on Monday when he goes, he doesn't look right away. He's looking instead at Shirley and Jack, who are playing table football with the Raisins, and at Bridger and Pierce, who are arguing furiously about something to do with the role of capitalism, and Abbott and Annie, who walk in together shoulder to shoulder, smiling, thick as thieves. Annie bounces up at Troy as if nothing's wrong. As if nothing's weird and broken and out of sync. How's your fail doing? She asks, and Troy presses his lips. I haven't looked at her. Annie frowns. But you're usually such a purple pile. She steps around him and reaches for the windowsill. Troy stands up suddenly, shoving his lap stool back with a loud scraping noise, and pushes him aside with him, beats him to it. I've got it, he grumbles. Annie stumbles backwards. Troy can feel her behind him, can feel Abbott looking at him too, but he doesn't turn around to look at them. He feels irrationally angry at them both, and ashamed that he has no right to be angry at anyone. He pokes her way out to see if he's pregnant yet. Well, Annie asks, loudly, crossing her arms. She's pissed at him. And the next thing we'll hear, Shirley and Jeff stop talking and turn in unison toward Troy and Annie, as if they had some kind of shared synchronized gossip detection mechanism. At least Bridger and Pierce are oblivious to notice. I think there might be some seeds, Troy says eventually, and steps to the side, gesturing Annie up to look at the plant, choosing for courtesy, but overcompensating more quickly. Thanks, Annie mumbles. And gives Troy a quick look before making Abbott help us out. Abbott comes to stand next to him. Is this about? No, Troy says, loud enough that even Bridger and Pierce noticed, turning to look at them. shakes my hand, smile, and points rage enthusiastically around my head. Congratulations, guys. I'm at my most. And Shelley and Rachel echo him quietly. They're all still glancing from Troy and Danny to Abbott before any little expressions. Troy wishes he could just disappear completely. He takes a deep breath, braces up, and steps a little closer to Ronnie. Thanks, he says to Abbott, then turns to me and his eyes. So, do you want to do the diagram? Or, I mean, I can do the diagram. Annie shakes her head. No, you did the last one. I mean, I don't mind. I don't mind either. They end up talking over one another, and then both stop talking at the same time. Well, if you want to, go ahead, Annie says eventually. Okay. Troy says he's got to me. He digs around in his backpack for that he's got to start carrying since becoming that person's man. Sorry, he says, we finally find you. Sorry, Annie. That's okay, she says, and grabs him. Troy, what's wrong? Troy doesn't particularly want to break down crying in biology. Again, and he doesn't even know he can tell her anyway. Doesn't know if he has the last word. Nothing's wrong is part of the answer. I don't know what's wrong, but everything's wrong. He opens his mouth silently, but is saved by Dr. Kane. He tries to be out in front of the class, already talking. Alright, today's the last day to use the microscopes, and I need that, because we only have 6 microscopes in the entire school, and the chemistry department wants them back. Let's get to work on those slides. Abbott sits down next to Troy and leans over to speak in his ear. Do you think Dr. Kane is that Professor Snape? Troy smiles a little. Then he's Harry Potter, he asks. You, Abbott replies immediately. You're everyone. Daddy can be Hermione, I can be Luna, and... You're not wrong. Abbott's mouth turns down the corner. Maybe this isn't the right cultural reference. Maybe not. Troy agrees. Sighing. Abbott asks him if he wants to do the episode of Consul Reggie meets the inspector again. Troy, he answers best judgment, says okay. When they hold hands, Troy squeezes even harder than last time, and shivers when Abbott whispers in his ear.